Hi everyone, I'm Stephen Reisner, and this is Madness, where psychology and capitalism collide.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
I'm coming to you today from New York City at the dawn of the third decade of the 21st century. Thus far, the 20th century still stands as the most violent and cruel in human history. But America was spared much of that cruelty because of our distance from the sites of the wars and genocides of the 20th century. We could fancy ourselves a refuge because of our geography and our values. America was the place where you crossed an ocean to get to, and if you crossed that ocean, you were welcomed. That, at least, was the dream, the American dream, the dream America dreams of itself. If you Google the American dream today, what comes up first is the webpage for a mega mall in New Jersey called American Dream. And they describe themselves as follows: a revolutionary, first of its kind community of fashion and luxury retail, fine to casual dining, and an array of unexpected entertainment at the Meadowlands in East Rutherford. Further down the list, you might come upon a photo exhibit, also called the American Dream, currently on display at the Skirball Cultural Center in Los Angeles, about 3,000 miles away from the Meadowlands. And in that exhibit, there is a photograph of a part of a poem, the poem that best expresses what most of us think of when we think of the American dream. It is the poem at the base of the Statue of Liberty. But in this photograph, the words of the poem are made up of the letters you would find in a package of dried alphabet soup mix. It sounds a bit hokey. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. All made up of dried alphabet soup letters. But if you look a little more closely at this American Dream photography exhibit, you'll learn that the photographer actually was a janitor at the Customs and Border Protection Processing Center in Arizona, and his job was to dispose of the trash at the center. And the trash consisted mostly of the confiscated belongings of the undocumented migrants who were arrested in the desert. Anything that the customs agents determined was non-essential was simply tossed out. But the janitor, Tom Kiefer, his name is, when he discovered what was in this trash, he couldn't throw it out. He began collecting it and bringing it into his garage and sorted the belongings into piles. And then he photographed them. Piles of toothbrushes, piles of water bottles, medicines, shoes, dried soup packages. The American dream? If ever there was a dream that needed a psychoanalysis, this is the dream. So today, I will be using Freud's interpretation of dreams to analyze the American dream. A psychoanalysis of the American dream sounds like madness.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, your father achieved the American dream, and so did you and your family. from one immigrant American to another immigrant American, I want to say to you that you and your family represent the very best of America.
That was Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy speaking to Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vindman at the impeachment hearings of the House Intelligence Committee, where the American dream itself seemed to be the star witness. The Republicans on the committee, as we all know, refused to call witnesses, probably because their American dream is already in the White House. The Republican version of the American dream is simple. In this country, any immigrant can become rich. And once you've become rich, your job is to stay rich and to deport those who try to follow in your footsteps. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, back where they came from. The Democrats, on the other hand, worked to rekindle the lamp beside the golden door. They did call witnesses, mostly immigrants and children of immigrants, Sondland, Vindman, Yovanovitch, Hill. And I have to admit, I was moved to tears hearing their stories, because like Krishnamurthy, I could identify with each of them. Ambassador Sondland spoke of his mother, a Holocaust survivor. My mother, too, was a Holocaust survivor. She survived the Auschwitz concentration camp. Colonel Vindman's family fled the Soviet Union and settled in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn. My father fled the Soviet Union and settled in Brooklyn. I grew up, in fact, a few blocks from where Colonel Vindman grew up, in a working-class housing development called, and I'm not kidding, Trump Village. I could relate when Fiona Hill spoke of being accepted into an Ivy League school in America despite her working-class accent. I, too, attended an Ivy League university in spite of my working-class accent, except that in Hill's case, her accent was that of the coal miners in northern England, whereas mine was that of a schoolyard kid from Brooklyn. Coffee. Wood. Ambassador Yovanovitch's immigrant parents escaped the Nazis, and like me, she attended Princeton University. Congressman Krishnamurthy also went to Princeton. Vindman and Hill went to Harvard. Listening to these hearings, you'd think, my God, that's the American dream. In America, all immigrants attend Ivy League schools. I remember, as I was leaving home for the first time, moving from Trump Village to Princeton, I became emotional and told my father how proud I was to have him as a father. After all, I said to him, you arrived in America without a nickel in your pocket, and now your son is going to Princeton. My father was insulted. What are you talking about? When I came to America, I had $400. My father did not waste a second poking a hole in my romanticized image of him. He was a harsh, critical thinker who first escaped the Nazis into Soviet Russia and then escaped the Soviets and made his way to America during the McCarthy era. He had little patience for communist fantasies or capitalist dreams. His influence, painful as it was one of the reasons that I became a psychoanalyst. He taught me to be suspicious of the stories we like to tell ourselves. So, let's see if we can apply psychoanalytic dream interpretation to the American dream itself. Freud, in The Interpretation of Dreams, made the case that dreams exist first and foremost to allow the dreamer to continue sleeping, that whatever arises in the night that might disturb the dreamer is incorporated into a dream. He called that function wish fulfillment. And he gave a famous example. He described the dream of a father who had just lost his son to illness. And the father has a dream while sleeping in the room next to the room where his dead son lay. And here's how Freud describes it. A father had been watching day and night beside the sick bed of his child. After the child died, he retired to rest in an adjoining room, but left the door ajar so that he could look from his room into the next where the child's body lay, surrounded by tall candles. An old man who had been installed as a watcher sat beside the body murmuring prayers. After sleeping for a few hours, the father dreamed that the child was standing by his bed, clasping his arm and crying reproachfully, "Father, don't you see that I am burning?" The father woke up and noticed a bright light coming from the adjoining room. Rushing in, he found that the old man had fallen asleep, and the sheets and one arm of the beloved body were burnt by a fallen candle. Freud goes on to explain, the meaning of this affecting dream is simple enough. The bright light shining through the open door onto the sleeper's eyes gave him the impression which he would have received had he been awake, namely, that a fire had been started near the corpse by a falling candle. It is quite possible that he had taken into his sleep his anxiety lest the aged watcher should not be equal to his task. We shall then note that even this tragic dream is not lacking in a wish fulfillment. The dream was given precedence over waking because it was able to show the child still living. If the father had wakened immediately, he would have shortened the child's life by this one moment. So, borrowing from the dream that Freud describes of the father who wishes to stay asleep and deny the death of his child, we could say that at this moment in history, it is the Democrats who are attempting to deny the death of the American dream. So they parade witnesses to convince themselves and the rest of us that their America is still alive. And if we look to history, it should come as no surprise that the American dream was actually first popularized. The phrase was first coined at the very moment when America's dream of itself was rapidly unraveling. James Truslow Adams coined the phrase, the American dream, in 1931 at the height of the Depression in his book, The Epic of America. This is what he wrote. The American dream, the dream of a social order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position. The American dream that has lured tens of millions of all nations to our shores, a dream of being able to grow to their fullest development as man and woman, unrepressed by social orders which had developed for the benefit of classes rather than for the simple human being of any and every class. But we understand now that by 1931, when James Truslow Adams wrote of the American dream that has lured tens of millions of all nations to our shores, unrepressed by social classes, both of those elements had already been shattered. Wealth inequality was at its highest point in history, and American immigration was being drastically restricted, particularly for Asians and for Europeans considered insufficiently white. In fact, Congress had gone beyond restricting immigration and had begun deporting immigrants. By the early 1930s, well over a million Americans of Mexican descent had already been deported under the Mexican Repatriation Act, in spite of the fact that most of them were American citizens. In fact, by this time, in the early 30s, Ellis Island itself had become a center for deportation rather than for immigration. And so forgive me if when I hear the Democrats speaking of immigrants and patriotism and opportunity today, I hear a new version of the 1930s epic of America. Today, like in the 30s, immigrants are being deported in record numbers. Income inequality has reached levels not seen since the Depression. And thousands of American citizens, too, are being detained in these deportation operations. And so, in our dream of the America of Vindman, Yovanovitch, Krishnamurti, Sandman, Hill, me, we can forget for the moment what America has become. A place where baby food and shoes and water bottles and alphabet soup letters of the tired and poor huddled masses are being tossed out as trash. Watching the impeachment hearings was a bit like watching the American screwball comedies of the 1930s, where everything ends happily because the homeless man is really a Harvard graduate who needs to teach the heiress a lesson, where all we have to do is get rid of Trump and immigrants will be going to Princeton again, and all Americans can enjoy the revolutionary center of fashion and luxury retail, indoor skiing, and fine and casual dining that is the American dream.
We're in the money, we're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money, the sky is sunny. Old man depression, you are through, you done us wrong. Oh, we never see headline about red line today. And when we see the landlord, we can look that guy right in the eye. Oh, we're in the money, come on, my honey. Let's lend it, spend it, send it rolling around.
Let's take the interpretation of this dream a step further. The French analyst Jacques Lacan revisited the dream of the burning child and asked the logical question, why does the father wake up at all? If the dream is so comforting, why doesn't the father stay asleep so the child can live on and on? Is it because the fire is actually getting stronger in the next room? For Lacan, it is more than that. For Lacan, the father wakes up because the dream itself becomes too painful to bear, more painful even than the reality that his child has died. Why? Because the child in the dream is not represented as simply alive and happy. The child in the dream speaks to the father reproachfully. Father, can't you see? I'm burning. For a psychoanalyst, the kernel of every dream is not a simple wish fulfillment, but an unconscious wish fulfillment, the fulfillment of an unconscious wish. It is unconscious because the wish itself is unbearable to the conscious mind. What is repressed into the unconscious is repressed, obviously, because it is painful. It can't be tolerated. And as Freud says, what is repressed ramifies in the dark, like a fungus. The father wakes up, Lacan says, because the dream reminds him that he feels that he himself bears some responsibility for the death of his son. Let's remember that according to Freud, the father went to sleep with the anxiety that the old man may not have been up to the task of watching over the boy's corpse. It's a small step to understand this anxiety as a displacement of his own guilt feeling, that he himself was not up to the task of saving his son. The father is reproaching himself in the dream, using his child's words. He is, in effect, saying to himself, "Why couldn't I see? He was burning." Of course, I bring in this dream as a warning that we are all living in a twilight reverie between sleeping and waking, hoping that the American dream will save us, that the impeachment hearings will save us, that the election will save us. A twilight world where somehow we continue to believe that our institutions, such as they are, will save us, when, in fact, the only thing that will save us is to take seriously the reproach of America and its children. The reproach of every child held in a concentration camp today. The reproach of every child sold by Republicans and Democrats alike into the slavery of debt. It is the reproach of the world's refugees who flee not only oppression, but hunger and drought and rising seas, who flee the effects of greed and capitalism on their homes, their farms, their oceans. It is the reproach of the rainforest, the fish, the birds, the glaciers. It is the reproach of the earth itself. Father, don't you see? I'm burning. When I was little, my mother told me the story of the moment my family arrived in America. My parents had waited in Germany for 5 years after the war until they got their visas to America. They traveled with my brother, who was 3 years old, across the Atlantic in a converted Navy ship. As my mother told the story, aside from clothes and bedding, she brought very few things with her from Germany, but two stand out: a casserole dish, which I still have, and a large enamel milk can. When they pulled into New York Harbor on January 13, 1950, and my mother saw the Statue of Liberty looming above her, she impulsively threw the milk can overboard. When I was a child, it completely perplexed me, and I always fantasized about getting her a replacement milk can. But as a psychoanalyst, I came to understand that my mother saw the Statue of Liberty as her new mother, and that she no longer needed to hold on to the lost mother of the old country. So I'd like to end today with the entire poem as it is written at the base of the Statue of Liberty. The new Colossus. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows world-wide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. "Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp," cries she with silent lips. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door."
shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree, dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me while I'm alone and blue as
I'm me. Stephen Reisner, and you've been listening to Madness, where psychology and capitalism collide.